Hello, rock and roll rebels, and welcome to another episode of Ramble On with Rosie. We are here with our final segment of Spring's Timber. We have been celebrating Bruce Springsteen all month long, and as September comes to a close and the boss man just had his birthday a couple days ago, we are wrapping it up. Which means I'll have to come up with something else to talk about next week that doesn't relate to Bruce, which will be difficult because I've been on a Bruce kick all month. But be that as it may, I am sure I will come up with something to talk to y'all about. I'm going to hopefully have an episode at all next week. I will be on the road and on vacation, and I will try to do something around that. But if there is no new episode next week, that's why. But I'm probably gonna record something before I leave on my trip. But that little PSA out of the way, we will dig into today's topic, which is Bruce Springsteen and whether or not he is punk. Now, I realize that punk is pretty difficult to define. In fact, the definition of punk may be the fact that it is defies definition. It's a pretty punk thing to do, you know, screw with people's heads like that. It's a birthplace for endless debate. What is punk? Where does punk end and new wave begin? You know, is folk punk? There's, it's a mill that does nothing but produce debate. But I will be addressing the topic from my own personal perspective on what I feel punk is. So take this with a grain of salt, because sometimes, you know, you may have a different view, and it's music. It's very much up to interpretation. But to me, there are three, like, fundamental elements of punk, or separate elements, rather. You have the music, so you've got the bands you traditionally accept as punk, like the Ramones and the Clash, and the Stooges are punk, the Misfits, Green Day of the more modern, you know, bands that are definitely punk, like you see them and you're like, that is punk. Then you've got the look, you know, your leather jackets with lots of buttons and attachments and chains and studs, and you know, it's not just a leather jacket, it's a leather jacket that's gone like edgy and hardcore. And then the ideology, which is, you know, sort of, to me, you know, the anti-establishment aspects of it, the stick it to the man, general willing for like independence, and occasionally the anarchist takes as well. But like, very much like not against the grain in whatever format that takes, whether, you know, whatever it is, there, it's rebellion. Whether it's rebellion against government, rebellion against, you know, other ideologies that are, you know, rebellion against commercialism. There's a whole bunch of things that like could fall under the punk ideology. And Bruce's music may not always fit into the punk ideology, but a lot of the times it does. Just like he may not always fit, and most of the time he doesn't fit the music, you know, melodically, the definition of punk, nor does he always fit the look, but he does at times. And in some of the places that he does that are in songs like Crush on You and I Wanna Be With You. One is on Made It on the River, the other one is an outtake, and they both have that fast, aggressive guitar and like hard hitting vocals that you would associate with punk. However, maybe because they're not sung with a slight British accent, people don't acknowledge them as punk. I'm not saying all punk artists were British, and obviously the Ramones invented punk and they were from New York. But if you listen to the Ramones' first album, there's a couple songs on it where it sounds like they're trying to sing with a British accent. So, like, I feel like that's just subconsciously interwoven in people's ideas of punk, is it has to sound like a foreign accent. And Bruce doesn't sound like a foreign accent. So maybe that's where he just missed their grade. But Crush on You and I Wanna Be With You are pretty punk-sounding. Another outtake from The River with some punk elements is Held Up Without a Gun. It's got the fast driving pace that you would traditionally associate with punk. It's got, you know, kind of a rebellious, you know, I fought the law and the law won sort of sound to it lyrically and melodically. But this isn't just, you know, post, like, punk explosion, you know, because we realize punk started in the early mid-70s, around 74, I want to say, is when, like, the Ramones were at the CBGB club and, you know, forming and stuff, and you had the rise of punk, and then, of course, like, by 77, 78, it had exploded. But he did some stuff before, you know, during the very early days of punk that sounds pretty punk. You can go all the way back to Greetings from Asbury Park, New Jersey, and find some punk-sounding songs. The strongest contender in that debate, to me, would be Hard to Be a Saint in the City, because all you got to do is hit those vocals a little bit more punchy and punk-like, and turn that acoustic into an electric, and just hammer people in the face. Like, it sound- I mean, the lyrics sound punk, the melody sounds punk. I mean, I'm sorry, lines like, I was born blue and weathered, but burst just like a supernova. Sounds pretty punk to me. Like, that whole song is pretty dang punk. It mentions leather jackets and the whole shebang, so. Punk before punk was punk. Because Bruce doesn't fall into the punk genre. The punk genre falls into Bruce, because Bruce is his own genre. Like, the amount of genres he has dabbled into are pretty much endless. You know, he's not just a singer-songwriter, he's not just a rock and roller, he's all those and more. It's, you know, the world's greatest garage band and, you know, the folk, you know, Guthrie, Seeger, Dylan-esque character. And so much in between, you know. While he's never done a rap himself, there was a rap interlude on one of the songs on Wrecking Ball. Bruce has done it all. And so, like I said, Bruce doesn't fall into the punk genre. The punk genre falls into Bruce, because Bruce is his own genre. But Hard to Be a Saint in the City could reasonably be covered without much alteration in a very punk way. And that song came out in what? Greetings came out in, I can never remember if it was 72 or 73. So, punk really hasn't happened yet, but Bruce is doing punk before punk happened. As Bruce does. He is that cutting edge, you know, because he does what's in his heart. And as he discussed, you know, in that world, what he was living in, you know, the Vietnam, post-Vietnam world, you know, where the American dream had kind of been tarnished, you had to face reality, which is sort of the beginning of where punk came from, was stripping off all the superfluous BS and addressing reality as it was. It's like when they asked Bruce, how at 23, 24 years old he could write a line, like what's in Thunder Road, of, you know, you're scared and you're thinking that maybe we ain't that young anymore when you're not even 25, and he's saying a line like that, and he's like, Vietnam had happened. None of us felt young anymore. It wasn't hard to write that. So that being the case, he had some punk elements before punk was, you know, really emerging, which is pretty nifty. But moving on from that, another song that is acoustic that could totally be punk, along with about half of the album it's off of, is Johnny 99. Johnny 99 sound like it's thematically kind of punk with, you know, the clash and encounter with the law, the desperation and somewhat, you know, frivolous waste of life are all kind of punk things. And like, Vega, I can't remember his first name, but he's in the band Suicide, mentioned when he heard Nebraska when it came out, he was like, this is pretty punk. Like, this sounds like, is this something I had done? Was sort of what he'd asked himself. You know, it was that punk sounding, which is, you know, pretty interesting. He even spotted sort of a similarity between his vocal yelps and the yelp that's on State Trooper on Nebraska. And honestly, like I said, about half of Nebraska, with some rearranging, could be turned into punk. There's another song that is on Nebraska that I'll get to an earlier version of later, but Open All Night definitely has punk element, and its predecessor of Living on the Edge of the World definitely has some punk elements. But before we get to Living on the Edge of the World, I want to discuss Roulette, because it covers one of punk's favorite topics, nuclear! Though in this case, it's power, not weapons, but still another big issue of debate at the time. Because Bruce wrote Roulette after the Three Mile Island nuclear reactor incident, which, you know, a bunch of the people in the area sort of had to, you know, evacuate because they weren't sure what it was going to do. Fortunately, the overall fallout afterward really wasn't. It's not like a bunch of people in the area got cancer and they had to shut it down and block it off. They mishandled the situation, but thankfully, it didn't turn into some, you know, Chernobyl or Fukushima type incident. It was, you know. It didn't explode. People can still visit Pennsylvania in that area, and, you know, it didn't affect the livestock and stuff like nuclear stuff does. But at the time, it was a big issue. And Bruce covers it in Roulette, and he covers Roulette in. He does Roulette in such a punk style that there were some comments on the Song Facts article on the song about how it sounds almost Elvis Costello-esque. Which, of course, Elvis being a big punk, you know, mover and shaker. Speaking of Elvis, is not that one though. Elvis Presley. Bruce Springsteen made the comment about Vega, the singer for for Suicide, that if Bruce, I mean, that if Elvis came back from the dead, he'd sound like Vega. And I'm like, that's an interesting compliment to give someone, sir, but. Irish, that's a pretty high compliment, as strange as it is. But, like I said, now that we've covered Roulette, we will discuss Living on the Edge of the World, and how, for the love of goodness, I don't know why the Ramones did not do this song. It sounds so Ramonesy. I don't know if that's a word, but it is now. Like, I know that Bruce wrote Hungry Heart for the Ramones, and I want to say it's John Landau talked him out of it. He's like, no, that is a hit. Stop giving away your hits to other people, Bruce. Dang it, son. Put that on your own record. Which, good thing he did, because, you know, it did become a hit and broaden his appeal to a larger audience. But Living on the Edge of the World, is the song that the Ramones should have done instead of Hungry Heart, because they didn't get Hungry Heart. Sadly, they didn't, and extra sadly, they're not around to try and do so now. It's not like they have a second chance at covering this in their later life, which is sad. But Living on the Edge of the World is such a punk-sounding song, and it would make such a good Ramones song. I don't know if that's just because the whole "Hey ho, rock and roll, deliver me from nowhere" line sounds like something out of a Ramones song. Like, maybe that's just me. But that is like my vote for the song that should have happened. Sort of like Fire, you know, being written for Elvis Presley and then Elvis passing. Those two are like the song that should have ha the two songs that should have happened that didn't. By other artists that Bruce wrote. I don't know if he ever even thought about giving Living on the Edge of the World to the Ramones, but he should have. But that's not where his interactions with punk end. Back to discussing Suicide, the band, not the mental health issue. Bruce, if you look at it, and I was thinking about this even before I did this episode, Bruce hardly ever covers another artist's songs. In the studio, at least. Live, yeah, but in the studio, he hardly ever even co-writes with somebody. Like, if I remember correctly from my research, the first time that there's a Bruce Springsteen song that isn't written exclusively by Bruce on a studio album is, like Roll of the Dice on Lucky Town. Because he co-wrote that and I think a couple other songs with Roy Bittan. But the first outright cover on a studio album, I think, is actually Dream Baby Dream on High Hopes, which is was a song originally done and written by the band Suicide. The one we were just discussing that Vega is a member of, and Bruce thinks Vega sings like Elvis come back from the grave. Ghost Elvis. But, and of course Patti Smith was part of the punk movement and, played in the CBGB club. And he gave her Because the Night. So, Bruce has interacted with punk a decent amount. We'll get to my favorite interaction a little later in the show. But, like, while Bruce fits and doesn't fit the punk ideology, look, and, musical style, he does punk better than punk does punk. Because he covers the reality and harsh desperation and frustration of the world without going full nihilist like punk tends to. Punk tends to be like, the world sucks and it's going to stay sucky and there's nothing to look forward to, so let's set some things on fire. Which has an appeal, but at the end of the day, Bruce's side, the more righteous side, the side of the world sucks, but there are things worth fighting for, and those things are love and hope, is the better side. It's the side that wins historically. Not that it always comes out on top in a conflict, but it's the side of righteousness. So Bruce covers punk better than punk does punk, because he's punk with an element of hope. Even his punkiest sounding songs have, a sprinkling of something to look forward to, something to fight for, not just fighting to tear down the establishment or whatever, but fighting for the good, fighting for love, fighting for, a better world, and fighting with love rather than with physical weapons, which never turns out very well. Historically, the people who go to overthrow a government by force end up turning into the thing that they went out to destroy. There's the, I want to say it's the Athens, Tennessee incident, if you look up into it. Basically, there was a bunch of corrupt voter fraud in like the 30s, and then some ex-military guys, went and rooted it out, and then promptly 10 years later, they had corrupt voter fraud again. Violence is never the answer, which Bruce understands, and punk kind of sometimes can fail to do so. Because Bruce has like the crushing weight of reality, but there's also always the strands of hope. He's like the working man's punk. The working man, like the guy in Roulette with his wife and kids running from a potential nuclear fallout, doesn't have the time to go stand on a street corner menacingly with his hair in a mohawk. He's got bigger fish to fry and more immediate concerns. And he has to believe that there is a hopeful future because he's got children who are going to have to live there. He's going to work for a better future, but he's got to believe that it can exist. It can't just be like, the world is coming to an end. Bye. There's a desperate need for hope, and like I said, Bruce's songs usually answer that. Like, he weds the post-Vietnam, depressed world that we're still living in with the 50s and early 60s optimism which he grew up in. Because he's got the cars and the girls and, the sort of 50s all-American boy look and themes in his songs, but it's like they're also grown up, and they've seen what the world's become, and they've seen the glitter and the paint wash off of the American dream. So it's like his characters are betrayed by what they believe, but they're not hopeless. Like, they realize that what they were taught to believe in as youth isn't coming true, but that doesn't mean that there's nothing to hope for at all. Which is something we could highly do with remembering these days. Because it's like I've explained to friends of mine and stuff, and my parents especially, I'm like, because my parents are old enough, they lived and remember life before Vietnam. They remember the Kennedy assassination and this moon landing. My parents are kind of on the older side. But it's like I've explained to them, like, you knew a world before assassinations and before Vietnam and before, you know, the Nixon Watergate scandal. My generation has, like, zero faith in our country or the political process or really anything, because we never knew a world which, like Steve Van Zandt just said in his interview on East Street Nation, you know, like, where they could wake up every day, you know, which even things were bad, there was always gonna be, it was gonna be better than the last day, and there was always gonna be good music on. Now even our arts aren't anything to look forward to. And we have to look to the past quite often to find anything worth glorifying. So, which is why Bruce is so timely and relevant today. And probably forever. Because he covers that world where you're not that young anymore. And you are a little scared. But he doesn't go full nihilist and it's all hopeless and nothing to look forward to like punk does, and like the post-punk, post-grunge modern world of rock tends to do. And modern world of music at all. Like Stevie Van Zandt said in that interview on East Street Nation again, about, you know, the modern arts are just boring. And that's because they're just not very, you know, engaging. They're not uplifting. Bruce is uplifting. Bruce is almost always uplifting. So, like, the world before the end of optimism is still alive in Bruce's songs, which is needed. And they will come through for you. It's another reference over with punk is in 1995, so not all that distant ago, I was at least alive in 95, Mojo magazine requested that Joe Strummer, known for being a huge Bruce Springsteen fan, give his thoughts on Bruce for an article they were doing. And so I am going to read you Mr. Strummer's thoughts on Bruce Springsteen as contributed to Mojo magazine in 1995. Bruce is great. If you don't agree with that, you're a pretentious Martian from Venus. I'm sorry, but there's no better way to start a letter than how Joe Strummer just started that. Bruce looks great, like he's about to crawl underneath the cords with a spanner and sock the starter motor one time so the engine starts up, humming, ready to take us on a golden ride way out somewhere in the yonder. Bruce is great, because he'll never lay down and be conquered by his problems. He's always ready to bust out of the shack and hit the track. His music is great on a dark, rainy morning in England, just when you need some spirit and some proof that the big, wide world exists. The DJ puts on Racing in the Streets, and suddenly life is worth living again. Life seems to be in CinemaScope again. Bruce is not on an ego trip. Bruce is actually into the music. We need people like this. A lot of records today are made by people just to feed their fame. Bruce is great. There ain't no winging, whining, or complaining. There's only great music, lyrics, and an ocean of talent. Me? I love Springsteen. Signed, Joe Strummer. Like, and that's in 95, so that means it's after Bruce has gotten all that flack over Human Touch and Lucky Town. This is after Tunnel of Love. Bruce hasn't put out a punk-sounding song in a while. I mean, it's 95. It's been about 10 years at least. because, as we'll get to a little later on, there is one kind of punk sounding song to me on Born in the USA. Actually, there's a couple you could make arguments for, but there's one in particular that comes to mind. So, like, that is the King of Punk's take on The Boss, and if that doesn't tell you The Boss is at least a little bit punk, I don't know what does. I mean, he's got a ringing endorsement from Joe Strummer of The Clash. I don't know what more you could want. Speaking of, small side note on The Clash, this picture just had its anniversary, and I absolutely love the story behind it. For those of you who are listening to this on podcast and not watching it on YouTube, my t-shirt is the London Calling cover of Paul Simonon smashing the hell out of his bass on stage, which I guess he was really angry. Oh yeah, because the story is that the New York audience was not very receptive. They were kind of placid, which is the last thing a punk band wants. And so in his frustration, Paul Simonon just smashed the hell out of his bass on stage, and the lady who had been photographing the band for the last couple of weeks snapped the picture as a jump reflex. Like, she wasn't trying to snap it necessarily at that time. It just startled her so much that, like, her finger hit the trigger, I mean the shutter, and here we have one of the most iconic rock photographs. Was kind of an accident. But that little tangent aside, back to Bruce. There's some songs of his to me that really sort of grapple with the ideologies of punk. For one, one of the biggest ones that come to mind is Badlands. Badlands, not so much melodically, but sort of lyrically and thematically fits punk. You know, there's this rejection of the superfluous, a struggle to like reclaim the heart and soul, determination, but it's determination to better the world through like hard work and integrity and not destruction and anger. I mean, he explicitly mentions love, faith, and hope in the song. Like, all these positive things, the only things, like, I'm no, oracle, but as far as I know, love, hope, and faith are the only things that can actually change the world. And Bruce reminds us of that in Badlands, which is great, because wanting to take the hardcore punk road of destroying things does have an appeal at times, but the only true change is affected through love, hope, and faith, and hard work. And you can go look at Martin Luther King Jr. for an example of that if you don't believe me and The Boss. Another song off of Darkness on the Edge of Town, which is kind of like Bruce's most punk thematically album, is Promised Land, which is actually sort of what really got me on this kick, was to do thinking about Promised Land and realizing how punk it was. Because, like in Badlands, it's another hardworking guy, but he's stuck feeling frustrated, longing for respect. I mean, it's a pretty punk line when you've got Mr. I ain't a boy, no, I'm a man, is pretty punk sounding. And he's feeling all the frustrations and anger of punk, but he is living the normal, traditional job, life. And but he's feeling the frustrations even if he's not acting them out in destructive ways. And then Born to Run is literally a wonderful summation of, life once the glitter's washed off the American dream, once that the post-Vietnam world, but still a world of hope and love, and banding together with the other tramps to lit out and find some place that's, where you can work on the dream that you want, and try to make it a reality. And then and with Born to Run, it's not for like, busting out for rebellion and destruction so much as it is, it's for love. That's Bruce's things. Is Bruce is like punk, but if punk was centered in love rather than anger, which I think means Bruce does punk better than punk does punk, because love is the answer. Maybe that's just the hopeless lost flower child in me, but I think love is the answer. Usually, seems to be. The people who have said things like that are people I agree with. The people who have other solutions aren't always. But, that's, Born to Run being in that element. And then you've got the song I referenced that would be off of Born in the USA, which is Dancing in the Dark, because it's got the frustrations, it's a little bit anti-nostalgia, which is a element that some punk songs have of sort of, not being into dwelling on the past and being dwelling on the present, usually in how bad the present is, and, dwelling on the future. And Dancing in the Dark is kind of against nostalgia, and it's got the hunger and the desperation, the raw sort of snarling need for, life outside of the comfort zone. But again, like in Born to Run, and like in Bruce's, almost all of Bruce's songs, the risk isn't for, destruction and tearing things down. It's risking all that for love. Because, to quote the Beatles, all you need is love. But that sort of, concludes the songs that Bruce has that are punk. Now, there's a few songs that I feel like could be rearranged in some pretty kick-ass punk music. They're not always thematically, like, traditionally punk themes. But I mean, there are some romantic punk songs and dance punk songs. I mean, listen to the Ramones. They've got some I Wanna Be Your Boyfriend is a really sweet song. I'm not just saying that because I have a crush on Joey Ramone, just so y'all know. That is purely a different topic. This is, objectively, I Wanna Be Your Boyfriend is a really sweet song. And the Ramones are the inventors of punk, so you can't have sweet romantic punk songs. And if that were the case, I think Janie Needs a Shooter could definitely be turned into a romantic punk song. It's got some elements. This title sounds kind of punkish. I think it would make a good punk song. Also, with no lyrical, problem fitting into the punk category, just some melodic differences. Adam Raised a Cain. Adam Raised a Cain, if you took away that slow blues groove thing that it's doing and ramped it up and, gave it a shot of adrenaline, it would be a pretty hell of a punk song. Because it's definitely got the lyrical, aggression to it. Also, Streets of Fire. It's got anger, disillusionment, the title sounds kind of punk. And it's just, it's like punk in CinemaScope. Which, sort of references back to that Joe Strummer letter about, suddenly life is back in CinemaScope again. So Streets of Fire could be sped up, ramped up, amped up, and turned into a punk song. And Take 'Em As They Come, which is an outtake off the river, also has some kind of punk sound to it, so I think it could be turned into a punk song with a little bit of help. Like, melodically it could be, stripped down and, made a little bit more aggressive. And I'm sorry, it talks about switchblades. Like, that just sounds punk, okay? And it's got a general, like, kinda fighty attitude, which is pretty punk. So, those are my submissions for somebody do a punk cover of these. Somebody with more musical talent than me, because I cannot do that yet. Maybe one day I'll be able to play, these songs on guitar, but I am not to that point yet. So, on that note, if you want to make a cover out of these songs, please let me know if you do, because I want to hear punk covers of these songs. I want to hear y'all's thoughts. Feel free to hit me up on my Instagram. It's at Ramble On With Rosie. Or my Facebook page, which is also Ramble On With Rosie. And, feel free to give me your thoughts. You can tell me how you think I'm wrong. Like I said, music is a matter of personal opinion, but I'd love to hear yours. I will hopefully be doing an episode next week. Like I said, I'll be on the road. If I don't get one done, you can have a very special episode to look forward to the week after that because I will be interviewing my friends that I'm meeting up with on my road trip, and we will be discussing, at least this is what we discussing, we will be discussing the, top albums they would take with them into a nuclear bunker to rebuild society with after, the end of the world. Post-apocalyptic record collection, basically. Records that are so important that they feel like society after, the end of, after its collapse, will, the newly born society will need. So, fun topic there. One of my favorite questions to ask people, in fact. And we'll cover that and probably go off on a bunch of tangents, and hopefully it'll be a really enjoyable episode. So if I don't make one next week, you've got a really kick-ass one to look forward to the week after that. But enjoy, have a great week, be kind to each other, live out Bruce's punk is loving attitude, and I will see y'all in the next episode. And rock on.